other dimensions. Be the light, universe, and everything. So settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Mick and Sylvie Avery.
Hello everyone, this is Sylvie Avery and welcome to Spirit's Work, the metaphysical, the metaphysical, paranormal and spiritual information show that's designed to stretch your mind and help you to think outside of the box. And on today's show, as usual, my husband Mick will be deep trance channeling, and today we're going to be talking about seersism. So, if you'd like to phone in with a question about our subject, I won't go into it now because we'll get on with the show because Gregory can tell you all about it. But anyway, the number to call is, in the US, it's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And any international callers, it's 001-530-876-3222, but the international call isn't free, but it's only a quick call, so do phone in with a question.
Yeah, well, hi. I'm Mick Avery. As well as Spirit's Work on the wonderful and ever-present bbsradio.com every Monday at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 1 p.m. PST, we have another radio show, which is called Spirit Teaching. You can hear that on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 7 p.m. PST. If you'd like to know more about us, our books, book an Akashic reading, buy a CD or whatever, please go visit our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com and also now at www.spiritsworkradio.com. As Sylvie said, I'm a deep trance medium, and each week live on the show, I channel Gregory Hay, who had an Earth life 300 years ago. I have the ability to completely hand over my body to the spirit world, so they may use it to speak through, and I know absolutely nothing about what has happened during this time. When I go into the deep trance state, my conscious mind and my spirit are transported elsewhere by the spirit team who work with us, and then they bring me back again when the spirit communicator leaves. Now, I don't only miss the whole show, but I very rarely remember where it was they took me either. And that's kind of, you know, because if I remembered everything and if I concentrated upon it, it wouldn't happen. The mechanism wouldn't work. Anyway, that's my job. And so without further ado, I'm going to hand you back to Sylvie, who's going to do the whole of the rest of the show by herself. And
on the spirit world.
and the spirit world. And, of course, it's actually all thanks to her energy and the situation between herself and the vortex that enables Gregory and the spirit team to do this work in the first place. Anyway, so I'm going to leave everything now down to you, my dear, and I'm going to leave you right then. Bye.
Thank you. For those who haven't heard our show before, Gregory, who is going to be speaking shortly through Mick, is the spokesperson for a group of spirits of higher intelligence called the White Cloud Group. They consist of many great minds as well as ordinary people, and between them they have vast access to vast knowledge and insight. Getting my mixed words up today, folks. They've come to bring us their teachings because there's a need for us to have understanding beyond the constraint of our human minds. The subject matter that we cover, whether in our books or on our radio shows, is limitless and will hopefully help you to become more knowledgeable and better informed as to the nature of your existence on Earth, as well as your continued life after physical death, and also, obviously, before your physical life. Our mission is to bring truthful information and knowledge through our gifts of spirit to enhance people's lives and the lives of others and to restore the balance and the well-being of the planet. So like I say, if you would like to join us in our conversation, it's not a reading show today, okay, it's really, if you would like to join us and join in with the conversation, have a question or comment or whatever to Spirit Gregory, then the number to call in the US is 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756, and they are both toll-free. And then the international call, which isn't toll-free, which is 001-530-876-3222. So, well, Gregory, hello.
With love and light, and may blessings be upon your pathway, my dear friend, little bird.
Thank you very much. Now, I kept it short because I thought you might like to actually explain our subject matter for today.
Very well, then. Thank you. What our subject matter is about is theism. And theism, or the theistic way of looking at anything, is to say that something is a part of or has to do with God, or that your expression of who you are and how you view the world and the universe has something or not to do with an apparent creator or an apparent understanding that you have, perhaps to do with your particular religious instruction or your religious stance, perhaps where your view comes from, whom you think God is, or what the energy of God actually means to you. Now, I suppose to some people this may seem a little boring or whatever, but the point is that if you are going to look at any philosophical value of humanity throughout the history of humanity's survival upon the planet of Earth, you will look always actually from the point of cave dwellers, those people who existed in far-off times throughout the steeps of history, that you would acknowledge the birthright of humanity, observing the universe in all it is, in all its entirety, or perhaps just in the minuscule lives of those who could even just comprehend past a thought of going and out and obtaining food, searching for food, foraging, or whatever that was. It is to do with the mind consciousness of who you are as a physical being and who you think you are as a spirit being. What is, truthfully, your relationship with that which you aspire God to be? Is it someone, a personal identity to you? Or is it something which means to you that you can perhaps assimilate beautiful understanding to do with your connection with the earth? Or is it more extensive than that? Is it to do with the upper universe? The universal mind, for example? Is it actually to do with the tantalizing subjects of how you blend your energy as a mystic, as a being in meditation or seisi? Is it an energy that you encounter in your life, perhaps through the throes of angels, or the more, some would say, iconic situations of interactivity with angels or with fairy? Who is it that your deity has in common with? Is it that you worship one deity or none at all? All of these views are precious to an individual. Panentheists are people who actually understand God in the form of the universe and the supreme understanding of that interconnectivity with all life, that one does not benefit the other, but that all are one and the same. Whatever your theistic view can be, whether you are applied by monotheism, as in Christianity, the view that there is only one God, and it is in a semblance of that which is humanity, or whether it is more of a plural destiny, as in Hinduism. Could it be that perhaps there is more than one God? Could it be that your extensive imagination or the interplay with your mind to do with how you access the spirit world, is that something that actually creeps in to your concept of how you form a relationship with something which is a divine source? What is it then when you meet with spirit, when you meet with the divine spirit intervention? Is it something a part of creation, or are you saying or citing that it's something ulterior to it? So many questions.
Absolutely.
Pantheistic revelations abound. It is something, in fact, which actually came upon the human race in indigenous peoples. For thousands and thousands of years, they had practiced the art of understanding the inclusivity of God within their lives. Not one single being could be registered as superior to, and yet each and every one had their own individualistic experiences, perhaps through the sweat lodge, through certain situations of interplay between their ancestral homeland and how that interacted with them. Their ancestors weren't going anywhere, weren't having another physical life, in fact, but were still there where they left them, in exactly the same places, but perhaps more learned, more creative beings. In fact, in a state of oneness with the supreme creation of all life, but yet still learning, still being creative with that source of all soul. Could it be then perhaps that this is the tryst that you really truly belong to? Or do you seek something else? Sufism perhaps. Perhaps you turn to Islam. Or perhaps you turn to some other form of Hinduism. Or Buddhism, perhaps, the lack of the existence of God completely.
I don't think a lot of people realise that, naturally, with the Buddhist faith.
No, quite so. I understand that.
So what is their goal, then? I know there's lots of different methods that you hear about with the people that practice Buddhism in various different ways. I mean, there are so many.
Yes.
But what is the goal then? Because what do they call the ultimate being of creation that they are trying to ascend to?
That's a very good question, friend. I suppose it would be towards the Brahmin supremacy. And yet, Brahmin supremacy actually came about to do in as much as a part of Hinduism, not saying that Hinduism actually came from Brahmin, was a purified part of Brahmin theory. In fact, Brahmin theory actually had a law unto itself, really. Brahminism, a different form of theistic practice. Hinduism itself had a more plural outlook upon that of deities, actually looking and observing at many gods, many different mythological creatures, in fact, as well, that peppered the landscape of humanity with all kinds of varying forms and descriptions. And yet Buddhism itself appears to be of the unistic value, I suppose I would call it, that your spirit in itself can become, if you create something bad in your physical life, that you can come back as a worm. That means to say then that all life is linked together. Yes, as it is, of course it is. all life is linked together, so that's a plus. The point is, however, that the spirit identity of one being could be called into question by some who disbelieve Buddhist theory. I happen to think that some elements of Buddhist theory is very interesting, inasmuch as it acknowledges that all beings are spirit, which absolutely they are. But in the role of the universe and creation, you are actually looking at the spirit of a worm, and its consciousness is not necessarily at, obviously, the same level as the consciousness or the spirit of a physical being like a dog or a cat. One may create dualism between how they think and see the spirit of a cat vis-a-vis a worm, quite simply because of looking at the molecular structure, the consciousness ability of a worm, as opposed to that of a cat, appears to be that a cat has much more sensibility. In fact, in many times, it would appear that many Buddhists believe that, in a fact, the dualism of the spirit between humanity and some forms of mammal is, in fact, an interplay through different situations of life. Karmic attributes actually come along and dictate certain pathways of that spirit dualism and their rise in the considering ensuing lives. And that is repeated again and again. In fact, Buddhism also, of course, hails from the point of view that the life of any animal merely repeats itself. Some may hold, however, that the spirit of an animal moves from one creation to another, gradually ascending up through the landscape of souls to eventually reach the pinnacle. And what would that be? Humanity. Of course.
So why do we feel that as a primal being, millions of years ago, why did we feel the need to have some form of deity, some sort of worship?
Yes,
and reverence to anything.
Yes, an interesting point, my friend. I suppose really you could point back to very early conscious living people, peoples who actually structured systems surrounding the way in which they foraged for food, is the prime example of what they observed. So, if you take, for example, situations, patterns of early humanity, and the way that they may be looked in terms of the Egyptians, for example, you would see that before the time of the pharaohs, pre-pharaoh times were actually systems of great calamity. Because, in fact, the desert had quickly approached the nomadic peoples of the Arab states, of the Arab worlds, being that, of course, at one time, the Sahara Desert was not a desert at all, but in fact a lush, vegetational enclave of beautified forest. And in fact, it was a lush garden. So the situation then was that with the advent of goats, it became that the forest was reduced to nothing. And also with the advent of the arrival of various fluctuations in the forming of tectonic plate movement and that kind of thing, we actually had the planet wobbling about all over the place, which actually created various force fields of the Ice Age. In fact, there were, I understand that there were, in fact, two Ice Ages altogether. So, of the second Ice Age, which I suppose you could say is the primal one of interest to humanity, we can see that after that situation, there were many ties whereby those in the Arab world were actually looking at how they would manage their food. And clearly, they would grow crops one year because they were that way inclined. They would grow crops one year, forms of wheat and corn and that kind of thing, and rice, of course, and that actually what happened was that they would have a glut one year, and they would eat what their fill, and then they would just allow food to go to waste, and there was no actual control over what they did. So populations expanded and then decreased. They had various praises for ritualistic experiences that had been thought about and created by various philosophers of the day. People who looked and observed situations of the heavens and had decided for themselves, perhaps, had posed certain questions amongst one another. These learned people then actually began to join together and form little societies and groups.
Yes, but so somebody actually thought of it in the first place, though, for some reason.
Yes, I believe so. I understand that, in fact, if you look at, for example, the very first story that was ever written in Arabic times, which was called a story called Gilgamesh, and that, in fact, was about as close to a deistic point of view that you could get, which was that, in fact, in the inherent belief system that Gilgamesh had, that he went in search of God.
How much of that is true, though, because you've spoken before about the Bible and other teachings that have got, altered along the way before. So how much of that would be true, though?
Well, in a sense, you see, I'm not saying necessarily that it was true. I'm saying that it's a story, and it's really to do with how human beings, in their individualism, try to search and find the source answers of why they exist at all. And so you have this pattern set about, as I say, it actually originated around food, around the bringing in of food, the gathering of food, which humanity began to learn very early on, because it was a tribal balance nature, that of how to entrap certain forms of food, usually animals, of course, because actually, originally, many human beings were either completely carnivorous or they were herbivores. It depended entirely on where they lived. Many herbivores actually became partly carnivorous and omnivorous, in fact, and they actually learned to eat all kinds of foods. And that this actually became something then which was much more all-encompassing of the avenue of life of the place in which they lived. It depended, of course, on what they could actually grow themselves. It was actually quite early on, I suppose, that people, human beings, learned that they could actually eat the seeds of certain grasses. Hence, that you have wheat. You have all kinds of food sources that come from very, very small plants. Plants like grasses that grew in all kinds of varied states of environment. It was something that human beings learned. The follow-on from that was that some people actually specialized in the study of herbal medicines and remedies, began rubbing leaves and roots and things on their bodies in order to try to relieve certain irritations, and learned very quickly, just in exactly the same as all animals learn, depending upon their variety, species, type and form, their environment in which they live in, they too learn certain conditions of which they take in food in order to find their way through life, in order to bring restitution to illnesses that they have.
Yes, but they don't thank God that the food was there.
Do you know? Have you spoken to one?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, okay.
No,
okay.
I understand. I am playing with you, my friend. No,
but do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I mean, somebody decided that good fortune was something that happened through God's will, and that evil was something that if you were God fearing, God would help you battle against or whatever.
Yes, absolutely so, and that actually has been something which has come throughout the ages. In fact, in all forms of theism that you look at, you would acknowledge perhaps that there are certain forms of theism who actually identify, in fact, even a complete lack of God, that God does not exist, but that Satan exists.
You see, all that long time ago, it started with a group of people or peoples, and as we all know, we're like sheep, and we herd and we follow each other around, and it's interesting how it all came about, the need for a God.
Yes, I understand. If you look at the origination of humanity in the fields of Africa, in the jungles of Africa, you would acknowledge perhaps that in those very early days, both around Somalia and other places very close to there, you would acknowledge perhaps that it was a time of great upwelling, that in fact they were very careful foragers, much like the Australian Aborigines of today, that they still adopt very similar principles to the very, very ancient beings that humanity actually came from. You would acknowledge also that even in the early cave dwellers' drawings and paintings, that they interfaced with other beings, other species, from elsewhere, from different planets, from different worlds. And they too had acknowledged, instilled in them, a certain alternative nature, if you like, to do with the way in which they too understood and studied the various forms of, well, where did they come from?
Well, exactly. That makes much more sense, though, doesn't it? If somebody from another planet lands, and interacts with you, then that gets you thinking, and it snowballs from that. I mean, that is obvious. Whether you worship that person, or whether you follow their ways or whatever.
Yes, and it is then handed down as mythical stories of situations of visitors from up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then determines that up there and down here, if I was still a human being, still physical in this respect, that I would perhaps see the advantage of being up there rather than down here.
Yes, up there's always a good place to be rather than down there, I think.
Well, yes, because it is filled with the what-ifs, the necessity to reach up to there is something which then becomes lauded. It is apparent then that in the very earliest of times, my friend, many humanistic peoples actually gathered to pay homage to and then emit sacrifice to.
Yeah.
That trilogy of this deistic being as the creatures from that came from somewhere else that obviously appeared as gods to these form of early humans that actually understood very little about their own inner nature.
Well, they still do sacrifice children and even animals, don't they? Now,
oh, absolutely.
Even now,
so yes,
for the same reasons.
Yes, quite so. Some religions still have that implant memory.
Mm. So have we always been gullible then? I guess that's my question.
Or have stupid,
we,
yes.
Yes, gullible, stupid. Have we always needed something? I'm not saying that people that believe in God, I mean, I'm not saying
absolutely not.
I prefer to say the creative life force or whatever. And yes, of course, I mean, look at it, look around you. Of course there is something, but... have we always been easily led like that and impressionable?
I would say that once one person hooks upon a specific idea, then there are always going to be people to follow it, always going to be people who look at this or that theistic point of view and say, well, yes, I understand that this can be something which can actually help gravitate to my life and perhaps explain away certain situations so that I don't actually have to think of them.
So what about other dimensions, other planets, other races, other beings, species in other worlds? I mean, you know, what about Shillalibi, for instance, our friend Shillalibi who is from another planet, another dimension?
Yes.
Is there a race, is there a god that they worship? Do they have some form of deity or religion?
No, they don't actually have a form of deity or religion. What they actually view everything as is in the same panentheist view of the universe and the world in which they live in, and each other as well. So that, my friend, as I say, is in essence the view that everything is a part of that which is creation, and creation is a part also of all of the universe. Not that the universe is God, but that the universe is a part of the essence of what God is, and that every single thing within it is a part of that essence. A sort of a duality, I suppose.
Mm. And is that common amongst, I don't like to say alien races, but how would you describe
other
that?
Other species.
Other species,
yes.
Yeah, from
Let's
other worlds.
Let's just call them other species.
Yes.
They're like beings in fur or scales or whatever it is. That
yeah,
they
absolutely.
Have shiny skin or no skin at all.
So is this common then?
Panentheism is actually very common throughout the universe, yes. I have to say, in the more advanced races who look upon the situation of creation, if you will. Yes.
And are there many races that have as many different religions and beliefs as we do?
Oh, yes, absolutely so. It doesn't just happen upon the physical Earth. However, I have to say that many of them, through many aspects of religious understanding, there have also been many wars of attrition between them, those wars continuing actually in the spirit world unabated, I have to say. Their same individualism is, of course, the target for their own life. That is perfectly natural, and I am assured that it is something which beings continue to possess for as long as they wish of it. Myself, personally, I did not keep to my monotheistic view. In fact, actually, I didn't really have a monotheistic view in my physical life. I actually didn't really have a view at all. I saw, actually, and was always taught that God was in the likeness, or that humanity, rather, was in the likeness of God, and that was it and the end of it, and that all other beings and animals were a part of that system put there for humanity to live from, to help feed us.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that I was always led to believe. I never questioned it. Why should I?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something that came up. I questioned it the first moment that I passed.
Really?
Yes.
So you didn't actually question it until you passed?
That's right.
Because
when I passed and I saw the auras of the trees, it was something completely different to what I'd ever imagined had existed in physical life.
And the beings and the energies that you met were far superior in their quality of energy, their beauty and their love, than any human being could possibly be.
Yes, I didn't have to wait to see an angel.
Hmm. Okay, well, I've got a good question for you.
Yes.
If you'd like to join us with a question for Gregory, if you're interested in our topic today, the phone line in the US and Canada is free, and in the US it's 877-876-5227. In Canada it's 888-815-9756, and international callers, it's not toll-free, but it's 001-530-876-3222. Okay. What about the the alien races that are here on Earth, okay, with us, as there are quite a few different species, aren't there, here, mingling,
yes.
In one way or the other.
Yes.
Is religion a driving force that, is that a force behind any of their reasonings to be here, out of all of the reasons?
No.
They come. Not one is driven by a religion to bring their over, you know,
their
like,
gossamer truth.
Absolutely, yes.
No.
Yeah. Because
no,
we would do that if we invaded another planet.
Oh, absolutely. At the drop of a hat, yes, of course. You would have the various signs of crucifix or whatever it is that hails your particular star or whatever.
Mm.
Yes, of course. I understand that. I do understand that. And we have observed, however, that there have been some beings in the universe who have actually taken that view, in fact, in their own lives. And in point of fact, there have been some forms of beings who actually have tried to pursue the course that you suggest of humanity. I do not personally feel and assume or assimilate that humanity would be so bold as to try to strike that option in the face of adversity upon another planet or something like that. I think, personally, that humanity, if given half the chance, would only really use planetary interconnection as a way of bringing sources of minerals and that kind of thing. To utilize those sources of minerals, perhaps, so that they can create a longer lifespan, or perhaps they can use some energy like lithium, which comes from the sun, to actually utilize that form of energy, so that, being that it's a metal in any event, it means to say that it's something which is both a solid and also something which creates energy, and that you can use to burn energy to create other gases and other situations of combustibility. In fact, lithium is actually, I understand, one of the prime innovative materials that many beings to do with certain invocations of power to actually power objects, craft and that kind of thing across the universe.
Hmm. That's interesting. And it's also interesting how we turn God as to be the architect of our world, and also though it seems like that is going to be the thing that ultimately destroys it if we're not careful as well.
But,
you know,
yes,
not the
right. Oh, absolutely so. But actually, in a sense, that's in adverse effect to that which is you describe or ascribe as science. Because if you actually look at science, how can that possibly ascribe to God? So saying then, how can it possibly be that beings, humanity of true science, can actually affiliate themselves with anything to do with God? Because it is a hard task for many people to try to actually ascribe what God can be in the relationship of the practice of science. After all, the practice of science is to deliberately come with an equation or event which makes the manifestation in a repeated ability, in a repeated flat environment, to actually prove that the duality of a certain specific experience exists within any given metal, chemical, gas, or whatever it may be. Science proves that the deliberation of the world of matter and antimatter, the world of sheer forces, of the corrective forces of energy, and how energy may be used within the universal paradigm that is the physical dimension. However, it becomes also increasingly obvious that as the more that humanity itself becomes engrossed and into the subject of trying to describe one simple thing of movement is actually looking then into the epochs of the whole universal dynamism and how that can actually interplay and work across different dimensional states. It is so difficult for human beings to try to mold their understanding into. It is no wonder, no small wonder in fact, that many people of science actually create the object of atheism within their understanding of what could be the attractive force in the creation of all things. Still misunderstanding the concept of the duality of life and how life becomes apparent is apparently in a petri dish. Mm. How life becomes apparent is in fact a chemical reactive source. That is true physically, absolutely, because you are looking at the embolism of physical forces in a physical world. That's the paradigm you are looking at. And if you are trying to explain to anyone what the force of God is within a petri dish, it will be very difficult to explain. Because humanity finds difficulty using language and word. Because language and word is self-defeating upon the prospect of what creation can be.
What about if you were in the spirit world before you had a physical life? What would you assimilate God to be? Or would it not enter your mind? Would it only be until you had a physical life on Earth or on another planet where they also had something, you know, a life?
Yes, yes.
Likewise.
Yes.
That you would even think about something like that.
These are such difficult questions, aren't they?
Yeah.
The point is, friend, that if you were a person like I myself, like you yourself, before you had a physical life, you were pure spirit. So what actually really does that mean? Does it mean to say that I myself, as Gregor, I had a pure spirit being? I was that pure spirit being energy as a part of that which is the creative force of all is. God, if you wish. If you will of it, if that is particular to you. We call that energy life force, universal plane of existence, which is within and throughout everything, every essence, every state of nurture and understanding or ignorance. Ignorance is not the bliss of no understanding. We all can create within that understanding, within that form of is. When we unite ourselves, understand, how can we understand if we have no consciousness? If you look at this problem coming from the perception of a Buddhist, you would say that it doesn't exist. That there is no concept of consciousness outside the realm of physical actuality.
Mm.
And in fact, it would then presume that the whole state of consciousness, if you look at it from a Buddhistic point of view, actually they would cite that there is no life before life in the physical state. This being the case, it means to say that all deities, looking at this from that perspective, or all forms of energy which then exist having had an ensued life, is the beginning of soul. It's the beginning of spirit. Yet they would not wish to acclimatize themselves to spirit, but would say that it's a part of soul, a part of the undying, accumulative effect of continual life existence, which is regurgitated again and again in meaningless conception. I understand, of course, that some would have it that this plurality of the division of soul then comes to the spirit world, becomes ascended, meeting with all ascended beings, becomes the pinnacle of that ascended being, and attains Godhead, and then does it all in reverse. And goes back down the other side, like it's some kind of mountain that you climb. The concept of human frailty is like that, because in the very first instant, what you did was look outside of self into the heavens and said, that must be where heaven is.
Yeah, but somebody said that first, didn't they? It only ever needed one person to say that.
Yes, well, as I say, my friend, it actually first became interactive, because of the fact of the interplay with species outside of the Earth environment.
What about in the spirit? So, in the spirit world, before you had a physical life, you didn't... It's not something that you could have studied and called and then brought with you here, not thinking that you were... Do you know what I mean?
It's a very interesting point, my friend. Yes. What about all of the theocracies that were studied in the spirit world, perhaps in the halls of learning, to do with how not just humanity works, but all species in their determination of trying to find God within a self? Because, for sure, that is the ultimate place to look, is within a self. It isn't out there. It is within your own divination. The point is that what we are aspiring to make as a compromise position, no, as an actual fact, yes, is that everything that you observe in physical life is a part of that which is God. Therefore, there is no this is higher than that. It's just that there are more molecules, more structure of conscious thought. Does that mean to say then that a child who comes to have a conscious living thought in physical life, that it then poses the question, if this child just merely touches the physical life and then is gone, and does not complete the term of 60 years or 50 years, or if you lived in the year of cave dwellers, perhaps 30 years. Does it mean to say that that full life is not an aspiration? In fact, when in duality of purpose, you would see that the infant is in fact waiting in the spirit world, continuing to grow, continuing to use the cell division of its consciousness makeup. Ah, but you say there is no consciousness in such a mere wisp of a thing. Oh yes, there is. There's consciousness at the moment of conception, because there is the twinning of spirit and hence soul with that energy of the being itself. So when you, at a point of the point of conception as a physical being, meet with two cells that divide, you are looking at the conception of also that from the spirit world point of view, a pure spirit has attached itself to those two cells. What do you think it is that is the spark that you see and observe when those two cells unite? That's what happens.
So is it the, basically it's the word God that is a scary word, really, isn't
much
it?
Much trumped, yes.
Yes. So
opposite to dog, I understand.
Yeah, but the thing is, we are all, there is a drive within all of us to, hopefully if you're a good person, to want to become a better person.
Yes.
So we all have that drive, hopefully within us, and we know that meditation raises our vibration and aids us in that journey to, I'm trying to avoid the word ascend, but
yes,
to become more pure and loving as
realized.
A being. Okay, to be more realized. So there's something that within us, and presumably it's our spirit, that is driving us, hopefully, towards something bigger and better, something
yes,
more unifying.
Yes.
So that is the energy that we're all talking about, isn't it? But we're all putting a different connotation on it.
Yes, and of course you would have many religious theocracies would actually have a fear of spirit within the divine self, because that intimates that God isn't up there, but it's within you. And that would then dissipate the stack of cards that they've already built in their struggle for power over and domination over the minions of don't you realize that that is how the theocracy has worked?
So, okay, so is this the driving force that's driving, like I was talking about earlier on, other species on other planes of existence and planets and that sort of thing? Is this the driving force as well, because they are a spirit form, having a different form of existence to us, right?
Yes.
So is it the same drive that exists there, the force behind their means of this religious virtue of whatever it is?
Yes, it depends, of course, on who you are. If you are a raptor, you would not.
No. Okay. Okay.
You see, there are, I agree with you, my friend, there are many forms of understanding in the universe.
Mm.
But as I say, most of them are panentheistic.
Mm.
So it means to say that they are very plurally accomplished, that they understand how the formation of the universe actually really works.
Mm.
And it isn't to say that God is a deistic. It's not to say that it is a particular being.
Oh, no.
But is the generalization of the conduct of the whole, and that each and every one of us is a part of that whole, which is why it is that if you try to bring about this positive loving force within thee, your vibration accentuates that loving force, and you become happier because you are more in touch with that divine presence.
Yes, but so you're saying basically, yes, so we're all part of this life force. But if you are something that is more, as in, I'll say cold-blooded and ruthless, as the raptor folk, then that is not something that would surface within your nature.
No, quite. Although we have marked on many occasions that some people, being inherently misplaced to encourage raptor beings, that you actually have a situation of a complication then in their understanding of their theocratic way and how they can actually embrace both love and also in fact be overpowered subliminally by this force of extreme negativity.
Yes, but that's because that they can pretend that they are loving. They can actually manifest themselves into being a loving being, can't they?
Absolutely so, yes.
So that's just, so that's a force in that's beyond our capability as a human being to be able to do the things that they do, isn't it?
Mm. Well...
Well, yes, we can pretend to be loving, and we can pretend to be, and we
yes, it doesn't last very long, I understand. There's a bursting point that's actually quite low.
Yeah, I do. Having said that, that's interesting.
See, you do have,
yes, we
in
do,
fact.
Because you have two-faced people that pretend they
like
you and they don't like
you.
So it's the same thing, and you can't tell.
You have serial killers or whatever.
Yeah.
Some people are not actually nasty upon the surface.
Yeah, true.
Some people are actually as pleasant as pie.
True.
And really want to invite you into their home and everything else, you see.
Yeah, that's interesting, actually. It's just. That's probably raising a few more questions in my little mind now. So
yes.
Well, thank you very much, Gregory. That's been fascinating.
Well, thank you so, my dear friend. With love and light, may every blessing be upon your pathway. Thank you so much, dear friend, for your loving energy, as always. God bless.
God bless. There we go, you see.
Whatever
we said it again. God bless. Yeah, okay, we won't go there. Okay, bye. Well, we hope you enjoyed the show, and I'd just like to mention our website again, which is spirits-teaching.com. And do join us again next Monday and Thursday for another Spirits Work show on the wonderful bbsradio.com. So until next time, Be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.